RadioInfluence.com.
He got him in the white trunks. He hurt him.
That's beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the count. Whoa. Here comes as a mention. And it's all over. It's all over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rick Franklin retained his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome to the August 29th, 2018 edition of the MMA Report podcast with Daniel Galvan. I am Jason Floyd, and coming up on this week's podcast, I'm going to give you a little nugget about Bellator 207 that I heard earlier this week that if you're a fighter on the Bellator card, you might want to take note of this potentially. Also, we're going to answer an interesting listener question about which fight card we'd be more interested in purchasing as a pay-per-view. We will recap UFC Lincoln, which of course took place last Saturday night in Nebraska. I will have interviews with Cody Stamann, Frank Camacho, and Anthony Romero. Of course, Cody and Frank will both be on next week's UFC 228 card, and Anthony is going to be fighting on a King of the Cage event coming up on September the 15th. Plus, we're going to have our weekly buy-sell segment, and we are going to discuss the recent comments made by Patricio Pitbull on Michael Chandler. Daniel, how you doing, man?
Jason, I'm doing good, but I've got to ask you, man, where is Ronda Rousey, WWE Women's Champion, on the rundown? I mean, she won the championship, Jason.
Clearly not on the rundown. Clearly not on the rundown. I do find it amazing of how much Ronda Rousey content still lives on MMA websites.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. And good thing there is not a mention of any pro wrestler on our rundown today. but the thing is, Ronda Rousey, Brock Lesnar, maybe Bobby Lashley. These are people who we care about.
And we do have a Bobby Lashley question in buy sell this week.
That's what I was alluding to. You know, we're guilty of it as well. But Ronda Rousey won the title. All the MMA websites got those clicks. And not only that, but you know, the other members of the Four Horsewomen are venturing into pro wrestling, making their pro debuts. Jessamyn Duke and Marina Schaefer. When in tagged with Shayna Baszler, Jason. So it's only a matter of time until you make your pro wrestling debut.
That is clearly not going to happen at all. Clearly not going to happen. Of course, this podcast is always available on RadioInfluence.com. If you're not subscribing to this podcast, we appreciate if you do that on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Play. While you're there, give us a rating and review. Always appreciate the ratings and reviews that people do leave up on this podcast. But I want to start off with a note that I learned on Tuesday about Bellator 207. Of course, this is a good card that's going to be taking place at the Mohegan Sun up in Connecticut in the beginning of October, October the 12th. Of course, that'll be on a Friday night card. Then, of course, the next night, they'll be up in New York for the second semifinal matchup in the heavyweight tournament. Of course, on Friday night, it'll be Ryan Bader versus Matt Mitrione. I previously reported that both Mitrione and Bader did submit out of competition drug tests. Both those drug tests did come back clean. And was talking to Mike Mazzulli about some other things. And one of the things that I found out in my conversation is that he's going to make a little change to the weigh-ins for Bellator 207, and this is going to be a change going forward with the Mohegan Department of Athletic Regulations, and that fighters are only going to have one opportunity to step on the scale. Still doing early weigh-ins, obviously 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., but you only have one opportunity to step on that scale. There is not going to be an additional 2 hours to make weight. So if you're a fighter or a manager that's going to have a fighter on this card and you're listening, you might want to tell your fighter that, if you step on that scale and you're 0.25 pounds over, there is no additional time. You have missed weight.
That's very, very interesting out of Mike Mazzulli. And in that conversation, Jason, did you kind of get a sense of maybe what was his motivation for doing this change?
I think this is just, it's another trickle-down effect of what's going on the regulatory side with weight cutting. You know, this is one of those, this is one of those stories I don't feel either way on. I don't feel strongly either way on it. I think the question probably, I think this is probably more about, you know, hey, if a guy or a lady has just been, you know, having a tough weight cut, you know, why, you know, should they be, you know, given another hour or two maybe to cut additional weight where maybe it's not the most healthiest thing for them. So, I just think that this is, and this is probably something I think we see more commissions probably, you know, do.
The thing is, I kind of get where he's coming from. And if you have someone come in, they weigh 3 pounds over, an hour is just an unhealthy amount of time to cut 3 pounds, I think, especially after the fighter has been spending that much weight cutting down. The reservations I do have, Jason, are in that middle ground. When you have a fighter who believes they are full go, they step on the scale and they may be 0.2, 3, 0.4, maybe even half a pound over. I think for those fighters, they probably deserve the opportunity to weigh in again within an hour. I like that flexibility. And it's also, and the nice thing is, because of the early weigh-ins, the fighters are in a decent amount of control. They can go out there and get weighed in during that time period and really ensure that they're on track with the scale prior to going out there. But mishaps do happen. Mistakes do happen. And my advice would be maybe to alter the rule a little bit in saying that maybe give it a 1 pound allowance, that if a fighter misses weight by a pound and a half or a pound or less, they are allowed to weigh in within an hour. That would be my one caveat, Jason, is I would hate to see a fighter have their pay reduced because they miss on their initial attempt by 0.3 or 0.4 pounds.
Yeah, because one of the questions that I asked Mike, I said, okay, so let's say the guy, you know, or lady steps on the scale at 9:05. I go, let's just say they're a half pound over. I said, you know, can they step back on the scale before 11 a.m.? He said, no, it's one time only. Now, I mean, look, there is another scale there you can step on to make sure, you know, that you're on weight. But I thought it was an interesting little nugget with Bellator 207. Obviously, not going to have any effect on the main event because, you know, Ryan Bader and Matt Mitrione aren't cutting weight to make the heavyweight limit. So it's not going to affect them. You know, you would imagine it's not going to affect Roy Nelson and Sergey Kharitonov either. You know, you have Brent Wars going on the card against Andre Filho, an interesting matchup between those two guys. I mean, both guys kind of at a very interesting point kind of in their career of where they're going. But yeah, an interesting little nugget I found out about Bellator 207. And it'll be interesting to kind of see how fans, fighters, managers, coaches kind of, you know, take this information in.
Yeah, you just got to make sure you're on weight, maybe even allow yourself some degree. You know, if you're fighting at 205, I don't think you want to go out there and be at 206. I think you want to play conservative and try and get down to 205.5 or something like that if you're making a massive weight cut. Just to be on the safe side, again, you can check. There's two scales, but you never know. There is a margin of error, I think, when it comes to weighing in at two separate places. And again, this is more of a long-term thing. Nice thing you found there from Mizzouli, but likely won't see this play out on the main card of Bellator 207. We don't really know what the fourth fight is, but again, if you have two heavyweight fights, rarely do you see a guy miss heavyweight, although Roy Nelson may or may not do so, but I don't think that will be that much of a problem for Bellator 207. But again, the Mohegan Athletic Commission is an active part of the Bellator itinerary, so surely we're going to have some close calls and likely some failed weigh-ins at some point in time with Bellator.
Now, I mentioned that we got an interesting question from a listener. This came on Twitter from @TimFrontKick, where he tweeted this to me. He said, a fight card primarily filled with top heavyweights and light heavyweights. A separate card filled with top lightweights and featherweights. Both have top 10 fighters from each division. Which card are you likely to purchase? You can't purchase both. Now, when I saw this question come in, Dan, I was like, that's kind of interesting. And I almost feel like there should be a stipulation to this question.
Will you take out Connor?
Correct. Connor has to be not a part of the conversation, because obviously if Connor is a part of the conversation in top lightweights and featherweights, you're going to pick that fight card. But when you look at this, I probably would go with the heavyweight, light heavyweight over lightweight and featherweight. But, you know, if you tell me it's Curtis Blaze versus Francis Ngannou, or on the other card is headlined by Brian Ortega, Max Holloway. I'm going to pick Max Holloway and Brian Ortega.
Yeah, well, look, if we're going to give Conor McGregor to the lighter weights, I think it's only fair to give John Jones to the heavier weights. I think that would be a fair concession. But let's just scratch both those guys and just look at it. I disagree with you, man. I really go featherweight and lightweight. And to me, a big part of it is both the elite level, the elite fights, and the depth. I think the depth of featherweight and lightweight is much greater than the light heavyweight division. I think that's the thing that's sinking the heavyweight, light heavyweight card, because you start to look at that list and you're looking at Błachowicz, Ilir Latifi, Manoa, Ozdemir, Anderson, St. Preux, Teixeira, Anthony Smith. Those are some of the guys that make up the majority of the top 10 of the light heavyweights. I just think you look at a division like lightweight where Nate Diaz is outside the top 10. You have guys like Yair Rodriguez and Zabit Magomedsharipov who are outside the top 10. I think the depth of lightweight and featherweight is a bit more interesting. And then the fights on top, I think, would be greater. I think Nurmagomedov versus, knock on wood, Tony Ferguson, or Max Holloway versus Brian Ortega is better than Daniel Cormier, Stipe 2, or Dan. I mean, would Daniel Cormier fight twice on this card, Jason? I do have a question about that. If DC fights twice, I might pick the heavier weight card. Otherwise,
yeah, you got to say once. You bring up Tony Ferguson. When you saw that fight booking against Anthony Pettis, was that a head scratcher to me?
I thought it was clear the UFC has no intention of booking Ferguson or Magomedov again. Look, that's a fight that I'm going to watch. But I think if you're Tony Ferguson, that's got to be so frustrating. It's a major step backwards for where he is in the division.
Yeah, I get having Tony Ferguson on the card. That makes all the sense in the world. But I was like, wow, that's kind of interesting. And, you know, I mean, I maybe thought that, you know, I mean, I think there would be other, you know, maybe other options, well, but interesting, you know, they went that route.
The other thing is, like, Anthony Pettis is definitely a commodity for the UFC. He's a guy you can build around. He's been famous since the Showtime kick. And by goodness gracious, he went and finally returned to form against Michael Chiesa. And instead of giving him an opponent where he can kind of look similar, maybe build upon that momentum, they're feeding him against a guy who might just be the toughest fighter in the division, in Tony Ferguson. So I think from both perspectives, Jason, that fight doesn't necessarily make sense, other than the fact that it's going to be an awesome fight.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and obviously, I think if you're Ferguson, you're probably as much preparing to fight Anthony Pettis as maybe potentially to fight Conor or Khabib if one of those guys doesn't make it to October 6th. But very interesting question there from Tim Frontkick. Of course, last weekend it was UFC Lincoln, and I wrote it in our notes here. The first thing I wrote, is karma a bitch for James Vick? I mean, give this kid credit. I mean, he promoted this fight tremendously, but man, poor James Vick. That knockout is going to be on the UFC highlight reel for years to come.
Oh my goodness. Not only that knockout, which was so like a Ric Flair pro wrestling move where he gets hit and he lands straight on his stomach or straight on his head. It was like a cartoon, like Tom and Jerry, and whichever one is the cat running into the door and falling down. I don't know which one's the cat in Tom and Jerry. I didn't watch that cartoon that much. I know you did it with the black and white TV. But not only that, Jason, James Vick going out there and like 2 minutes after the fight, shooting in on a double leg on Justin Gaethje, that is going to make the lowlights.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, and, you know, we talked about last week on the podcast that this was a fight to show if James Vick really was a, you know, a top 10 lightweight and, you know, he'd go out there and get knocked out the way he did. And after his fight was over, you know, I tweeted out Justin Gaethje, Kevin Lee. I think that's the fight that makes the most sense. I mean, I saw Justin Gaethje's manager mention about how Justin should be fighting Tony Ferguson, which I understand as a manager, that's your guy. You're trying to promote your guy, but it's like, okay, you know, hey, Tony's already got a fight, so that's not happening. But, you know, when looking at guys who don't have fights, Kevin Lee is the name that really stuck out to me.
You talk about getting emotional because of trash talk, which is kind of where Justin Gaethje was. I mean, he made no bones about it. He took plenty of issue with what James Vick said. I mean, Kevin Lee is going to unleash an animal if he gets mashed up with Justin Gaethje. And honestly, man, you look at this lightweight division, it is littered, absolutely littered with high impact, high action fighters. A Kevin Lee fight makes a lot of sense. Down the line, I would absolutely love to see Justin Gaethje inside the cage with Edson Barboza. I think that would be must watch. But so would Kevin Lee, Justin Gaethje, Jason. I think that's a great fight for both guys. In particular, I think Justin Gaethje, Kevin Lee is a fight that I don't know if it would pull a great rating, but it would really do well for those watching on Fox. If they just turn on Fox, they watch the pre-fight hype video, which I think Kevin Lee will say plenty of stuff, and then the fight actually happens, you're due for greatness. And again, that's what Justin Gaethje showed against James Vick, is that if you go in that fight and you eliminate the space you have for yourself to move around, you have your back against the cage, Justin Gaethje has so much power that all he needs to do is get you up against the cage, land the left and right, and you're out. And he can do that to anybody in the division. The trick for his opponents is to survive the initial onslaughts and begin to pick apart at Justin Gaethje. But James Vick just was not able to do that.
And speaking of the television ratings, the main card averaged 596,000 viewers on Saturday night. Of course, the main card was on FS1 prelims. We're on FS2. When you look at some of the competition the UFC went up against, you did have NFL action throughout the day. College football started up on Saturday. Some show called Mountain Life did better than the UFC show, whatever that is. Never heard
Mountain
of that show.
Life? Mountain
yeah.
Life?
Yeah. It had 1.3 million viewers.
Mountain Life. It's on HGTV. It's a house hunting program. It's a house in HGTV. It's a house hunting program. This sounds something right up your alley, Jason.
I'm not gonna lie. I have watched those shows at the gym because usually one of the TVs is on that channel, and sometimes I look at these. You know, I'm sitting there going, man, I wish I kind of had that kind of money just to rip my house apart and basically build a brand new house. Yeah, don't have that kind of money
yet. You don't have that kind of money yet, but you do have enough for an iPad stand.
I will tell you this, my new MacBook, I've got the touch bar thing. I was like, I use that thing all the time now. But it is kind of weird not having like a volume up down. You have to do the touchpad to, increase your volume up and down, which is kind of weird, but I've gotten used to it.
That sounds incredibly complex. I'm probably 5 years away from getting rid of my laptop I got 5 years ago. But it's one of those things where I think you get used to it.
Okay, your MacBooks last way longer than mine do.
Yeah, well, yeah, they do, man. But gosh, this keyboard looks disgusting. Like every time I crack open a laptop in public, which sometimes I do at work and whatnot, I mean, it just looks like I've been playing World of Warcraft for 16 hours straight with the Cheeto dust and other foreign material that I cannot describe.
Yeah, I spent a lot of money on new MacBook Pro. MacBook Pros are not cheap. There's a reason that, they have $1 trillion on sales or whatever it is. Yeah, there's a reason Apple makes all that money that they do. When it comes to the rest of this fight card, the other top two fights, both split decisions. Michael Johnson gets the win over Andre Feely. I think you could make a case that, that's either a 29-27 for Andre or maybe even a 28-28 if when you look at that dominant round that Andre had. Watching the fight, I kind of thought that Andre should have gotten the nod there. Courtney Casey, Angela Hill, Courtney Casey getting the win. I really didn't, a close fight. I don't think it's an awful decision. I think it's just a close fight.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think Hill Casey was a tad bit closer than Johnson Feely, a lot because a lot of those rounds to me could have gone either way. In fact, maybe 10-10s. It was a lot of, at times, really close striking or fighters attempting to take the fight to a certain area and not being successful. So it's hard to go and award points. Like you, Jason, I thought Andre Feely went out there and won that decision. But it was also a fight that I would concede is close. I thought clearly Feely won the most decisive round. And this fight night card was full of surprises. Not even in terms of the victor, but just the way the fights played out. For instance, I thought Eric Anders was going to go out there and destroy Tim Williams. But that definitely is not what happened. I mean, obviously Anders was able to go and get the knockout. late in the fight. But man, Tim Williams, for a guy who was such a massive underdog, Jason, he really held his own, and at times, you know, was winning rounds against Eric Anders.
Yeah, I mean, at that first round, I mean, Eric came out so slow. And by the way, speaking of Eric Anders, you can go over to the MMAReport.com or the MMA Report YouTube channel. I did speak with Eric on Monday of this week about that fight, and, you know, kind of talked about that slow start and what his coach, Chris Conley, had said to him. But then, you know, I tweeted about, man, just a well-timed, you know, head kick there. And he mentioned in the interview that I did with him, he said that he had noticed that through the fight, that he kept getting up the same exact way from certain situations. So, but if that kick is, you know, a half a second earlier, it's an illegal strike. But one of the things I did find very interesting that Eric said to me is that when the referee came into his locker room before the fight, Eric questioned him on what was the rules in terms of a grounded opponent. So he already kind of had that in his mindset of what is and what is not a grounded opponent. He gets a win there. You know, on the prelims, what did Yuri Alcantara do to that referee?
Oh my goodness gracious. What a glutton for punishment. What a great fight. But yeah. My goodness. Oh my God, that was nuts, Jason. That fight, I know it only went 61 seconds to the second round, but that felt so much longer because clearly Alcantara was done.
Yeah, I mean, first off, the first round where it looks like Alcantara is going to get an arm bar, and first off, I'm sitting there going, how is Corey not tapping to this? I mean, it looked like we were on the verge of hearing an arm snap on live television. I mean, that's what I kind of felt. Somehow he gets out of it and then just completely turns around. And that second round, I mean, you know, Corey looks at the referee and he's kind of like, dude, are you not going to stop this fight? Like, I'm sitting there and should be noted that referee was pulled from the event after that fight by Brian Dunn of the Nebraska Commission. But man, I mean, even tweet that. I was like, what did Yuri do to this referee to just, you know, take that kind of punishment? That, I mean, the fight should have been stopped way sooner than what it was.
Talk about having a bad day at work. I've had plenty of bad days at work. I've only been working like 4 weeks, but can you imagine working halfway through your shift and your boss comes in and pulls you to the side and says, hey, you're done for the day. Sit back, grab some popcorn. You're out of there. That must be depressing. But man, this shows you one thing about this sport, Jason. You never know who's going to be a star. I don't think we said Corey Sandhagen's name a single time in our preview podcast. No. And after watching his side of the Yuri Alcantara, I mean, oh my gosh, what a hell of a fighter. A guy who isn't a world beater by any means. He was nearly lost the fight, but the fighting spirit he showed, the personality in his post-fight interview, when they come from behind win, Corey Sandhagen, if we were awarding 3 stars, I think he would definitely be in contention for one of those 3 stars. But more than that, he's another guy, if you're the UFC, you know he is a guy on your radar and a guy who will soon have a Wikipedia profile.
Brian Barberina gets a win over Jake Ellenberger. Jake announced his retirement after it. I think probably we both had the same feeling as a lot of people after that fight ended, was, you know, thankfully Jake's gonna retire. But yeah, do you really believe Jake?
No, I don't believe any single fighter. But he fought like a guy that was gonna retire because it's just he was a step too slow against Brian Barberina. You could get a sense that he knew what he wanted to employ, but the game has passed him by. Ellenberger has had quite a few great fights, a guy I think known for some of his great power, and a fixture in the UFC for a very long time. So hats off to Jake Ellenberger for a solid career. Do I think he's going to stay retired? I sure hope so, but obviously in the sport, you never know.
I mean, think about this. Jake only won 4 times after 2012.
It's absolutely depressing. Depressing, I mean, to look at his record, his resume. And not only that, but think of how often he went out there and lost in knockout fashion.
Oh, I mean, yeah, some of those looking right at his Wikipedia page, he's 4 losses all by knockout. You know, 2-9 in his last 11 fights. And, you know, it's a sad end because clearly, You know, the chin just is not there like it once was. So it was good to see him announce his retirement, you know, but it is kind of tough to sit back there and ultimately truly believe that that is the last time we're going to see him. Davison Figueiredo, the flyweight, you know, nice knock TKO win over John Moraga. You know, you look at, flyweights to get interested in, and Figueiredo is someone to get interested in.
Oh, man, he's a guy I'm glad you mentioned, because I think if you're looking at this UFC card and you ask me which three fighters were the most impressive, I think Corey Sandhagen's up there. But of the guys we haven't mentioned yet, both Davison Figueiredo with his performance against John Moraga, the way he completely controlled him in every aspect of the game and how good he's looked and his undefeated resume, he would be one of those guys, Jason. This was a very Joe Silva-esque matchup between him and Moraga. And the other fighter was the guy opening the card, Hani Yahya. From a pure talent level, he stuck out to me as a guy who really is a part of, to me, like the top 5, 6, 7 fighters in the 135-pound division. And he just looked like it, going in there against Luke Sanders, taking care of business and getting the quick heel hook finish, showing that this was a part of the card where he just should not have been.
Hey, but you gotta have you gotta be more realistic with your call outs, Hani Yahya. All of a sudden calling for a title shot when you're not even a ranked fighter. Like, come on, like I like the that's your call out, but man, you gotta be a little more realistic with your call outs.
Oh, the purpose of the call out is to get a fight that you can actually have. Hani, you don't go from Luke Sanders to the champion in a single fight. You don't go from fight pass to pay per view main event. A bit of a nuts call out by Hani Yahya for sure. But I tell you what, Jason, I got to apologize. You know why? You know why I got to apologize?
Why is that?
Whenever I say things that sound stupid in hindsight, I got to apologize. And one of my big points in the podcast last week was like, George Sullivan should not be such a massive underdog against Mickey Gall. And boy, oh boy, did he go in that fight and fight like a massive underdog. I mean, Mickey Gall had his way with George Sullivan going out there getting that finish. I mean, it was a clear-cut, easy victory for Mickey Gall.
Okay, first off, and I tweeted about this. So Mickey Gall wins, a dominating win, and he throws his mouthpiece into the crowd. And I'm sitting there going, who the hell would catch a mouthpiece that's been in someone's mouth?
Okay. It's one of those things you don't think about it as it's happening, right? There's a lot of energy in the arena. And then, oh my gosh, he's throwing something in the crowd. You catch it. And like 20 seconds later, when all the noises died down, people are thinking about going to concession stands and going to the restroom. The person who caught is just sitting in their seat with his mouthpiece. And they're like, oh my God, I have to deal with this for the entire night. I can't lose his mouthpiece. This is disgusting. Is that blood? Yeah, I'm sure Mickey brushes his teeth, but it's definitely not a t-shirt, you know? It's a damn mouthpiece. That's an interesting thought.
Someone sent me a tweet, but they ended up deleting it, and they said, and the tweet was, you throw it in your beer and you do it like a shoey.
That's exactly what it is.
There is no way, and look, I know there would be fans that would try to catch that thing, but I'd be running for cover if you're throwing a mouthpiece that's been in your mouth at me. No way do I want to get anywhere near that.
So I did a quick Google search, and all I Googled on eBay was worn mouthpiece. Now, the thing I can't figure out is whether or not – I don't understand what this is, but it's going for $1,200. It's a 2012 Topps UFC Finest Chael Sonnen Grill Gear Fighter Worn Mouthpiece Relic. I don't know if this is a mouthpiece Chael Sonnen has used and Topps is selling it or what, but they are selling this mouthpiece for $1,200. And worst of all, there's also one from Vinny Malgahace that is being sold for $1,200. Who is buying this? Who is buying this worn mouthpiece? And why did Topps in 2012 decide to sell that?
Well, remember, you can actually go on to UFCstore.com and you can buy fight use memorabilia. Would you want Chris Wade shorts from his fight last year? How much do you think his fight worn shorts are going for on UFCstore.com?
I feel like they got to be less than buying the shorts without him wearing it, right? They got to be like 20. I mean, what, $100?
$500.
Okay. So do you think somebody from UFC just stole those shorts from Chris Wade? Like, he just left them? Do you think they negotiated like $250? Are they waiting until they're sold and they split it with them? Like, how is that done?
I'm not sure exactly what the fighter's cut is, but you know, it's one of these things. Like, okay, there's another event worn one where it's from Ed Herman from the Ultimate Fighter 25 finale. These shorts are blood soaked shorts, $300.
Are there only like two items?
Oh no, there's a lot of like, you know, shirts. You know, if you want a Dennis Bermudez event worn shirt, $300. A Leslie Smith shirt, event worn, $300. I mean, it's, yeah.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious. I'm looking at it now. It seems like they don't, like, it's so random. Like, they have Lyman Good gloves, John Volante gloves. Where's the Tony Ferguson gloves, you know? I don't get it, but I'm definitely going to put down $250 for my Junior Albini fighter worn UFC kit.
I mean, it's just amazing. I mean, like, you want Thomas Almeida gloves? $750.
You know what? Those gloves, and how does it make you feel if you're Tim Johnson, you're looking at it, and you see those are $750 and yours are only worth $300? I bet it makes you feel like a favorite.
This has to be wrong priced here. This has to be wrongly priced.
Uh-huh.
For $2,499.99, you can get Benil Dariush UFC autographed gloves from his fight at UFC on Fox with Cheetah versus Rockhold when he defeated Jim Miller by unanimous decision. That can't be the right price.
Yeah, that makes you think Dariush set the price and he didn't realize how, like the next most expensive gloves are $750. Who's spending $2,500 on that? I want to meet the last person that bought something from this store.
Oh man, that's I'm sure somebody does. I'm sure somebody does. But I would think it wouldn't just be better just go out and buy just like regular UFC fighter gloves and go to the open workouts and try to get them signed as opposed to trying. I mean, that's a lot of money to spend on some gloves.
It would cost less money than $2,500 to buy a ticket to the next Benil Dariush fight and fly over there. You would save money. You would say, oh, yeah. You probably should get a hotel room, but yeah. So, man, overpriced.
Dude, that's just, man, it's, but I'm sure they, some, you know, there are some people that do sell it, but back to these fights. Another thing that really stuck out to me, JoJo Calderwood with that triangle at the end of the first round where, I mean, I'm sitting there watching, I'm like, man, is Kalindra going to, you know, be able to survive and just, you know, she couldn't survive there at the end of the first round, but I don't know if you, if you saw JoJo's interview with the media after the fact where she, God, well, her comment was like basically like these bitches who try to take me down or something like that.
She is sounding like Conor McGregor or no, Paul Daly. Trying to take me down, that's the sport, Joanne Calderwood. And look, as much as I would love to see Calderwood go out there and kickbox, she's got to learn how to defend takedowns or, hey, throw up a Hail Mary armbar triangle submission, and that's what she did. But I thoroughly am glad to see her back in the cage. I mean, Kalindra really had she dominated the vast majority of this fight, and she obviously showcased kind of a hole in Calderwood's game. And when Calderwood takes on solid wrestlers with great submission defense, it's unlikely that she's going to win the fight. But she was able to obtain the finish, and it was a bit of a captivating end to the first round. But yeah, Joanne Calderwood, shocker. Every single fighter you see that you are going to face is likely going to want to put you on your back.
Yeah, exactly. Also, we got to mention James Krause, the TKO win over Warley Alves. James Krause on a nice little roll, now up at 170 pounds. Andrew Sanchez gets a win over Marcus Perez. Drew Dober with a decision win over John Tuck. So that is UFC Lincoln. Of course, no UFC fight card this weekend, which is great news for me, Daniel, because on Saturday I will just be sitting there on my television from noon till about midnight watching college football. So that's a good thing. But the UFC does return next weekend for UFC 228, which is a fight card that I'm not going to sit here and say I'm that excited about. Obviously, the fight card loss, Yair Rodriguez, it's now being reported. I believe it was Flow Combat who had it first. Brandon Davis is replacing Yair Rodriguez against Abit Magomed Sharipov. Of course, got Woodley Till, Montano versus Shevchenko, Andrade versus Kolkevich, Al Hassan versus Nico Price. And, of course, those prelims are going to be on FX. And Fight Pass, of course, we'll get into a little UFC 228 here momentarily with some interviews. Plus, next week we'll be sitting there and, you know, really talking about that fight card. But I'll tell you, that main card outside of the main event, Andrade Kolbakevich is a fight that really sticks out to me.
Yeah, that to me is a lot more interesting than Montano Shevchenko, just because it's a closer fight, and I think it's going to be great. And I still really enjoy Kovacevic. Jessica Andrade is a great fighter. To me, the main card is probably the weakest part of the entire lineup. I really enjoy quite a few parts of the prelims, man. Like, I'm going to sit there. I'm going to load my fight pass. I'm going to be watching these fights live. I really want to see Diego Sanchez for however more times we get him. I really value Jim Miller, and I think the Jim Miller-Alex White fight is going to be interesting. But more importantly, it's the FX card that really has my attention. I just think those four fights are great. Dotson, Jimmy Rivera is a fight deserving to be on the main card, as is Tatiana Suarez, Carla Esparza. That's a great fight, as is Cody Stamann, Aljamain Sterling. To me, you can make a case that those three fights are better than Al Hassan versus Nico Price, Davis, Magomed Sharipov, and Montano Shevchenko. In fact, I think they are better.
I'm kind of surprised that Esparza Suarez is not on the main card. It was initially, but then it got moved down to prelims, or even Sterling Stamann. I think you can, you know, kind of put over Hassan and Price, but I have to imagine that's probably more of, you know, thinking Hassan Price probably is a flashy first round finish. That's probably why it's on the pay per view.
But again, it's like I understand why, if you have a 5-year deal with the TV company, you're going to sacrifice some of your pay per view fights to maybe be on the FX card, like a fight like Esparza Suarez. Maybe that'll bring in more viewers than another fight they could have put there. But it kind of feels like a relationship that's already over, but you're just going through the motions. And when you're doing that, I think it serves the UFC a better purpose to put the five best fights on pay-per-view rather than still showing up for dinner and putting Suarez Esparza on TV.
I mean, here's going to be the interesting mark as we're doing the show, that the betting odds for Davis and Sharipov are not out there, but I mean, we could have a pay-per-view where we have two 10-1 plus favorites on the main card.
That's unheard of.
It wouldn't be shocking that if Magomed Sharipov is a 10-1 favorite.
Yeah, because like, he's awesome, and you're talking about a situation that the UFC cannot control. Maybe unlike Shevchenko Montano with an injury, you had to get that late replacement. I mean, I don't know when's the last time that's happened. Maybe when Hoyce Gracie took on Art Jimerson and Gerard Gordeaux took on Taylor Tooley at UFC 1. That's the last time we had two 10-1 favorites.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it's not something. I mean, there are some other big favorites on this card. I mean, Kolbakevich is you know, nearly three and a half to one underdog against Jessica Andrade. You know, Esparza, a 4.5-1 underdog against, you know, Suarez. You know, some of the bigger lines on that. But if you are looking to place a bet on UFC 228, you want to check out our friends over at MyBookie. Of course, this week's episode of the MMA Report podcast is brought to you by MyBookie. They have been in business for years. They have great reviews online, and their mobile site is easy to use. Lay down some cash and win big today.
Jason, let me tell you something. I would only recommend a service to my listeners that's been good to me. That's why I'm urging you to go to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business. And for you fantasy guys out there, I know you're listening. I'm setting up my own fantasy football draft this Sunday. You can even bet the over and under on how many fantasy points a player will score in each game. You think you're smart, you know which wide receiver or running back or whoever or whomever is going to have a great fantasy day, you can go ahead and bet on that player, Jason.
Join MyBookie today, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Yes, you heard that right. MyBookie will match your deposit 100% up to $1,000 for the MMA Report podcast listeners. All you got to do is use a promo code MMA Report to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MYBOOKIE. And don't forget to use a promo code MMA Report when creating your account to claim the bonus. You play, you win, you get paid. And don't forget that promo code is MMA Report. And we do appreciate them being a part of the MMA Report podcast. And speaking of UFC 228, we are going to get into the interview portion of this week's episode, where two of the interviews will be with fighters who are going to be a part of UFC 228. First up, you're going to hear from Cody Stamann. Of course, going to be taking on Aljamain Sterling. Then you're going to hear from Frank Camacho, who takes on Jeffrey Neal. And then the final interview, you're going to hear from the man that's going to be the main event of the King of the Cage event on September the 15th, Anthony Romero. Then when we come back, we'll have our weekly buy-sell segment, and we're going to discuss the recent comments made by Patricio Pitbull on Michael Chandler. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that is going to be a part of UFC 228, the feature prelim on FX. It's Cody Stamann gets that big matchup, another big matchup against a top-ranked guy in Aljamain Sterling. Cody, man, as always, I appreciate your time. I know the last time we talked, we mentioned about how you were, you know, looking for another big fight. You got it. But, you know, obviously, you know, there's been some social media back and forth. But do you think Aljamain respects your abilities, or do you think that maybe he's not giving you enough credit?
You know, I don't know. That's a weird thing. So he kind of like tried to big brother me in a way. But you know, I'm ranked 9th or 10th depending on the day, and he's 8th. So I mean, it's not like there's a huge variation in where we're ranked. You know, I just fought and beat a guy that was ranked higher than him. I mean, so like, I feel like his like whole big brother argument, not respecting me, is kind of irrelevant. I mean, I'm here, you know, the ranking did, I didn't get ranked, you know, in the top 10 because, you know, I was, I could see where if I was Sean O'Malley or somebody and I got thrown in the top 10 and I had never fought anyone that was ranked, you know, people would start raising eyebrows, but I'm beating good guys, consistently. So, you know, fuck what Aljamain Sterling thinks. I'm going to beat him up either way.
I did see there was a very colorful tweet you had at him within the past couple of days in terms of that. But, you know, it just, you know, obviously, I mean, you mentioned about it. You're coming off that win against Brian Caraway. Of course, Brian, you know, a lot of people think of his wrestling abilities. But how is this fight different, you know, from, you know, what you went through for Caraway in terms of Sterling?
Well, I feel like, I mean, as I think overall MMA fighters, I think they're kind of pretty much on a similar level. I think Sterling is a little more diverse on his feet. He throws a little bit more, on more diversity on his feet. They both have about the same amount of knockout power, which is zero. yeah, I mean, I look at it like it's a different opponent. You know, I need to prepare differently. But it's the same kind of fight as Brian Caraway. It's that level. You know, I know what that level is. You know, I watched them fight. There was a close fight. You know, Brian ended up winning that fight, but, you know, I know that level of MMA, and, you know, I know that, you know, I can beat that guy on a bad day.
His last 2 years, it's been up and down for him. You know, he's got 3 wins, but also has 3 losses. As you have prepared for this matchup, I mean, what do you see as has been the issues for him in terms of why he's had this up and down streak?
So, I mean, I look at the 2 split decision losses. I think anytime you're in a split decision, you're in a fight like that. I mean, there are 2 things that happen. Like, you go into the third round. You know what I mean? Obviously, if it's a split decision, you know, you guys went 1-1, and that third round is going to decide who wins, you know, and someone that really has a will to win pushes on the gas pedal and does whatever it takes. They'll die in there. You know what I mean? Like, I know that about myself, that if we're 1-1 in the third round, like, you're going to have to kill me, right, to beat me. I'm going to empty the tank. I know that. And that's just, you know, part of, you know, being a competitor, you know. And I watch Sterling in those fights, and I kind of watch him fade in those third rounds. And that's, you know, that's where I think him and I differ. You know, if I'm in a tough spot and, you know, the chips are down, I'm going to do absolutely everything I absolutely have to do to win, to where I feel like he cracks a little bit. He doesn't want to get in that dogfight. that you kind of have to get into sometimes, you know, when the chips are down. So, you know, for me, it's, I'm on my way up, you know, I haven't peaked yet. You know, I've only really been training full time. That's my only objective in life, is to be a good fighter for, you know, a little over a year. So I think I still have a lot of an upside, and you'll see that, you know, on this next fight and my continuing next fights. But you know, Sterling, he's been around forever. He's kind of been in the same place for 2 years. Like you said, he's 3-3. He's had big fights. He hasn't been able to win those big fights. And he's got another big fight ahead of him, and let's let history repeat itself, and I'll beat him up again.
Now, if we're talking about a scale of 0 to 10, and 10 is the peak, where are you at right now?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I look at, it's not so much about like learning new techniques, or it's about honing the techniques that I already have and then being able to apply them at the right time. And I look at, you know, my last couple fights, and I'm always really critical about my performances. And, you know, I haven't had that fight in the UFC where I was like, ooh, man. If anything, I think the fight I'm most proud of is the Tyrion Ware fight, because I was injured and I had, you know, a week to prepare for the fight. You know what I mean? I literally had no training for that fight, but I came out and did what I had to do, and I fought really, really smart. I kind of baited him into fighting a fight that I wanted to fight. And I feel like that was, you know, in my opinion, my most impressive performance in the octagon. In my last two fights, you know, there were a lot of opportunities, a lot of things that I've been training that I didn't apply to the actual fight, you know, and that's a mental thing. And that's just a maturity thing as an athlete. You know, I think that, you know, what I've shown in the octagon compared to what I know that I'm capable of, I feel like I'm really at 6%. I feel like I'm a D minus, you know what I mean? And I know that I can be an A. I just got to keep studying. I got to keep working and keep improving.
For you, is this game just more mental than anything else, of taking what you're working in the training room on a day in, day out basis and making sure that shows up on fight night?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, fighting is 100%, you know, it's in your own head. You know, you obviously train your body to do the right things, to do the things you need to do to win. But it's the application that really matters. And it's like having that strong mental game. Having that strong mental game plan. You know, you see some guys just have it. Some guys, you know, you put them in a cage and they're just killers. You know what I mean? They go out there and commit suicide. It's like a street fight every single time. And you see those guys that, you know, maybe have all the skills in the world, and one day they show up and they look really good and they look really sharp, and the next time you see them fight, you're like, dude, what happened to this guy? It just, you know, kind of fell off. So I think, you know, the biggest fight for me and for every athlete, every guy that gets in the octagon, is the fight between your ears. You know what I mean? You got to convince yourself, and you got to train your mind, your body, to be perfect. And that, you know, I think that's what we strive for as martial artists, is to be perfect. And I'm telling you, it's a never ending process. You know what I mean? You can throw the same technique a million times and still, you know, get better at it. And that's one of the things about MMA that's so interesting.
Perfectionist. It's something I try to strive to every day in my business. For you, I have to imagine that's a trait that you're always trying to conquer that. I mean, but do you kind of sometimes feel like maybe you think about that too much and maybe little things might slip?
No, I mean, MMA is a game of inches, right? I mean, it's the daily progression, you know. You're not doing the same move every single day. You're constantly trying to evolve, but you're also constantly trying to sharpen that sword. You know, you can't always pick up a new weapon and think you're going to be like really, really good at it. You know, yeah, you kind of have to hone the skills that you have. And, you know, that's a constant process. You know, if you're cutting wood all day, you know, you have to constantly sharpen your tools. So, I mean, for me, it's a sharpening thing. And I feel like I'm going to be the sharpest I've ever been this fight.
Obviously, a win puts you, I would think, in probably a top five-ish type fight. And, of course, we just had the bantamweight title. Does it bother you to kind of hear that you know, the 125-pound champion wants to fight the 135? And does that bother you that a guy that hasn't fought in your division potentially could be stepping in to get a title fight?
No, I mean, because I think it brings attention to the weight class. You know, I think I don't think Henry Cejudo can beat TJ Dillashaw, so I think it you know, while it does put the belt on hold, you know, for me personally, I'm not really that worried about it because, let's be honest, I'm two fights away from a title fight anyway. So they can sort it out. You know, TJ can fight whoever. And then when it comes to my time, when I'm peaking and I'm ready to be in that position, you know, they'll have all that sorted out and I'll be ready to snatch what's mine.
I mean, it seems like we got a little bit of a logjam right now at 135. I mean, there's really, I think, not a clear number one contender. I mean, you can make the case for a Sun Sal, Moraes, even Dominic Cruz. I mean, do you kind of look at yourself and say, okay, I win here, you know, maybe potentially cards play right and I can find myself into one of those fights?
Yeah. I mean, a win here and a fight against one of those guys you just mentioned, I feel like, and then I can make that argument like, hey, I'm the next guy. So, and you're right, logjam's a good way to put it. At 135, there's a lot of guys at the top that could literally be the next guy that deserves the shot. And, I mean, I wouldn't argue with you if any of those guys got that shot. As long as it's one of those guys, not some random person, you know, farther up, yeah. Unless it's me. But, it's a crazy weight class. I don't know many. I can't think of one other weight class where it's like, okay, yeah, there's three guys that could be the champ right now, or three guys that could be the next guy to get the belt. I mean, the only other weight class I can think where there's guys like stacked up at the top like that is 155, and that's another, you know, crazy stacked weight class.
Yeah, I mean, there's some weight classes where it's not quite sure just because.
Yeah,
I mean,
like, look at 205. Champ for 10 years, right?
Well, look at 205. Yeah. I mean, that's a division where you're like, okay, you know, who does Cormier fight next if he defends the title? Mm-hmm. Where's the John Jones situation play in? But yeah, right. That's a great thing for you. But you got this fight here. Was this your first time going to Texas?
No, I want to say I was in Houston for one of Darren's fights. I think okay. It turned out well, so I think I've had pretty good luck in Texas. Okay, I'm excited to go back. It's a cool place.
Yeah, I've gone to Dallas a couple of times. We've always had a good time there. Go there later on this year, so I'm looking forward to it. So, but Cody, man, as always, I appreciate your time. Of course, let everyone know where they can follow you on social media, and if you got any sponsors that you want to mention, floor is yours.
Everything. I'm just Cody Stamen. Check me out on Instagram. That's usually where I do most of my social media. It's the only one I really like. Every now and then I'll get on Twitter and, you know, talk shit to all my feeling, but outside of that, I'm not much of a tweeter. Thanks for having the interview, and I look forward to putting the show on for everybody.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that returns to the UFC Octagon coming up on Saturday night, September the 8th, UFC 228, Dallas, Texas. It is Frank Camacho. Frank, as always, man, I appreciate the time. Where is the Crank Effect documentary? I'm on your YouTube page, and we haven't had one in a while.
I know, man. I've been busy, but we're working on episode one, and we'll be coming back out with it, you know. So it's just kind of like a recap of everything that's been going on, because I've been really, really busy. So it's just gonna be like a little update of what's been going on and what's next.
Man, does January 27th feel like it was so long ago for you?
Yes, January 27th does feel like it's a while. And I was just talking to my team and I was talking to my wife about it. And man, it's the past year has just been crazy, you know, man, just fight after fight after fight. And now it's kind of cool. I had some time off and got to just mentally prepare for our next one coming up, you know, and how many months is like 8 months later, and finally I'm getting a fight. And yeah, and those last three fights, they weren't the easiest fights, you know.
I mean, all five of the nights that you've had, staying at 170 pounds, is this is kind of the decision made 170 is now your home, or have you not quite closed the door on 155?
Have not quite closed the door on 155. I mean, ideally, right, if a 165 pound weight class came out, but man, right now, man, 170 is a home for me.
In terms of on fight night, what is the difference when you're at fighting at 155 as opposed to 70? Is it, I mean, do you just kind of feel crisper? I don't know if that's the right word to say, but is there just a different feeling you have?
Yeah, different feeling. You know, like at 170, first off, I enjoy fight week. You know, I mean, I still have to cut weight. You know, I still have to cut weight even during fight camp. But Man, fight week is so enjoyable. I get to enjoy it with the UFC staff and just and with my team and with everything, you know. And during camp, I just really get to concentrate on what I need to do instead of fighting the scale. And then after rehydrating, and it's not even that much, you know. And even fight night, I just feel rejuvenated, you know. And versus like at 55, I'm kind of questioning like, okay, man, I might need to pace myself, you know, or whatever, because of the cut killed me. So, yeah, it's just kind of like one of those things, you know.
I was watching another interview you did, and you were talking about, you know, things that you expect to have in a fight and ultimately don't happen in a fight. As you have reflected on your three fights in the UFC, have you at all felt that maybe you overanalyzed the fight too much and it kind of got in your head a little bit?
You know, that's a very good, way of looking at it, because, man, at the end of the day, you know, like, I think, and I feel like a lot of fighters do look at it this way too, is, you know, man, there's this, you know, I'm going to go in there, I'm going to throw a certain combination, it's going to open this up, and I'm going to get this takedown, I'm going to get this submission from this position. But, man, you know, just the last few fights has really just made me think and realize that, man, at the end of the day, it's a fight, you know, and just keep it simple as that.
And you got Jeffrey Neal. You're going into his backyard. Do you like that? You know, being that guy that's going into your opponent's backyard.
Yeah, well, you know, coming from Saipan and coming from Guam, everywhere I go is someone's backyard. But hey, man, dude, the few hundred Islanders that are coming out, we're coming out strong. But yeah, you know, no big deal. It's and it is what it is. You know, if anything, it's just gonna push me more to stay out of the judges' scorecards.
You know, in terms of, you know, I guess the cliche we always hear is, hey, I like this fight for this reason. Hey, stylistically, I think this matches up well for me. So when this fight is approached to you, what do you remember? What your just initial thoughts were?
My initial thoughts. So I got a call from my manager, Jason House, and he said, hey, September 8th, Jeff Neal. First he said, I was like, Geoff Neal. I'm like, man, this, I hate this name. And then I was like, Jeffrey Neal. But when we first got the call, I remember his fight in the Contender Series. And I was just like, my first initial thoughts were Sean Shelby. I know what you are thinking with this fight.
You know, but obviously you're deep in preparations. You still got, as we're talking here, another 2 weeks or so before this matchup. So what is like these next 2 weeks before you start to make that travel to the United States?
Man, just keep doing what I'm doing. You know, if anything, this camp was a lot of specific training, you know, a lot of lefties, a lot of drills with lefties, and you know, the time off, I've really had the time to mentally prepare and work on the things that I was not able to work on with the last three fights. You know, my last three fights, there's a lot of shoulda, woulda, couldas, and you know, now I'm mentally prepared to kind of like make those adjustments. You know, in between those last three fights, it was just kind of like, okay, on to the next one. Okay, on to the next one. On to the next one, you know? So, just continue doing what I'm doing for this whole camp. And I'm just kind of, I'm really excited, man, to see, you know, a new and improved Frank Camacho, you know, and not only for the fans, but more so for myself.
Mentally preparing. That's something we hear in the fight game, you know, all the time. What does what is that for you to mentally prepare, you know, for a 6-8 week camp and then fight night?
For me, mentally preparing is just thinking about the repetitions of what I need to do and what I need to, you know, the way I need to approach the fight. You know, 8 weeks out, I'm still thinking about making that walk. You know, it's just that for me, it's that that constant going through the motions of how the scenarios, worst case scenario, best case scenario. And that's the mental. Sometimes I'm texting my team at 2 in the morning, you know, thinking about, man, what do you guys think about this? What do you think about that? You know, so I feel like that's the mental prep, you know, the mental preparation for, or, I mean, well, I guess every fighter is different, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but I guess the question is you talk about, you know, texting your teammates about, you know, various techniques at 2 o'clock in the morning. What turns your brain off to not think about the fight?
Yeah, you know, maybe, you know, I haven't really thought of that, but maybe it's my, you know, when I come home to my family, mm-hmm. You know, I have a newborn son. He's 5.5 weeks. So I'm getting ready to leave to the gym. So as soon as I get in the car and I leave, it's like, boom, I'm thinking about the fight. I have my pre-fight playlist that I play, you know, right before leaving, right when I get in the car, just so that it kind of gets me back into the zone and it just re-clicks like, okay, this is what we're thinking about. It's strength and conditioning, man. I gotta push because, you know, I need to do this, I need to do that in the fight. And then during conditioning, I'm thinking about every push-up is for a reason, every sprawl, every burpee is for a reason. And then as soon as I'm done and I'm blasted and I'm tired, by the time I get home, it's family, you know, and it's you know, like a two-year-old that is just full of energy and is running around and he just wants to watch Jurassic Park all day. It'll definitely get your mind off the fight.
Is that the hardest part for you, being the family man you are, of knowing, you know, hey, I've got to go away from a week, and I have to imagine your 5 week old is not coming to Dallas.
Actually, my five week year old is coming to Dallas.
Oh, so the question is how do you think your son's going to handle the flight?
Man, you know, here living in the islands, you know, you're going to have to get on flights anyway, you know, so yeah. He's solely dependent on, well, he's not flying with me. That's the question. He's going to be flying with his mom, and they're going to be coming out like a few days. They're going to be doing their rounds just to kind of see family. But, yeah, that's not on me, bro. She's gonna have to worry about it. But man, usually usually my kids are really good with the flights. Like when my 2-year-old son, man, he was on a flight at I think at like 3 weeks or 4 weeks, you know, because you know we had to go to see family in a different island. But they're solely breastfeeding, so they're good to go. The mom, my wife, is she's so awesome with my kids.
So how long of a flight is it from Guam to Dallas?
Oh, gosh. So I think we're taking the Hawaii route. So we're going from Guam to Hawaii, which is about, I think, 6-7 hours. And then Hawaii to, I think, hopefully we go Hawaii, Houston, and then Houston, Dallas.
Wow.
Yeah, total about like, yeah, maybe like 16, 17.
What do you, like, do you try to go to sleep? Is that what you try to do? Or are you kind of like, sometimes for me being on a plane, it can be tough for me to fall asleep.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like hit or miss for me. Either I can fall asleep real quick or like I'm up.
Man, you know, I'm pretty used to it. So, I think what I try to do is I try to stay up as long as I can on Guam. And then when we leave, I'm sleeping, you know, pop and then, you know, take some melatonin and then I should be able to cry. But I'm a good sleeper though. So it's like not a big deal. If anything, it's trying to get acclimated to Dallas time. That is an issue. Like like my last fight in Charlotte, that was one thing that I was not so proactive with. And mm-hmm. We were sleeping like at four in the morning every night in Charlotte.
Wow. Yeah, I think that's the part people really don't think about for the, you know, fighters who are not from that part of the world. They come into another part of the world is getting that body clock. I mean, do you kind of feel, I mean, especially, you know, whether you can come in, you know, I mean, some guys may come in 2 weeks ahead of time just to adjust.
Yeah. So I'm going to be there about seven days before the fight. So it should be enough time.
But it is, of course, part of that big card. Of course, headlined by Tyron Woodley against Darren Till. Frank, man, as always, I appreciate time. Of course, let everyone know where they can follow you on social media, where we can look for the next season of Crank Effect and everything else going on in your world.
Yeah, man. You know, so come check me out on Instagram at Frank the Crank, or on Facebook, Frank the Crank Camacho. You could just search me out, and or my website at crankeffect.com, and I'll be updating my show and on YouTube. So. Yeah, man, I'm sorry. I haven't been updating you guys, man, just been so busy, but, there's a recap coming and this is going to be updating you what's been going on.
Joining me now on the MMA Report podcast is a man that'll be in the main event of the King of the Cage event coming up on September the 15th. It's Anthony Romero. Anthony, this is the first time that we've had a chance to speak, and really we just want to start off our conversation by asking about your nickname, The Genius. What is the origin of this nickname?
The Genius, it comes from my coach. I used to, like when I first started, I came from the kids class at my local jiu-jitsu gym, and I started training with the adults, and I just started doing whatever I could to get a sweep or something on them. And my coach is yelling, this kid's genius, right? He's just making up moves and stuff like that. So, and as well, in my fights, I do my best to fight smart, not take a lot of damage and stuff like that, as I want to have a nice long career. So,
Anthony, you had 10 amateur fights, and that's a number that stuck out to me based on conversations I've had with other fighters who have gone through the amateur ranks. It seems that the number 10 is the magic number. Was that the magic number for you, or did it just work out that way?
I wasn't really planning on a specific number of fights. It was just me, myself, as a fighter, feeling comfortable in there. It wasn't until after maybe my fourth or fifth fight where I started to feel actually comfortable in there, getting used to the three-minute rounds and stuff like that. I lost my second amateur fight to a good wrestler, and I learned a lot from that fight. So once I got to my 10th fight, I kind of figured that I'm having a hard time getting other fights and stuff like that, and I feel ready to make that next step. So, yeah.
You hate to lose, and no one wants to lose, whether it's a fight game, video game, or whatever they do in life. As you look back on that now, do you view it as something that was one of the best things that happened, maybe because it caused you to look at things differently?
Yeah, absolutely. After that fight, I started wrestling at Brock University here close to my hometown in St. Catharines. And they're by far the best wrestling team in Canada. So a lot of great coaches. My wrestling coach, Chris Prickett, has helped me so much. I can't thank him enough for all the stuff he's helped me with. Yeah.
You talk about how martial arts came to you at a young age. Was there a point that you realized that your goal was to at some point become a professional fighter?
Always as a kid, I've been told that I'm athletic and good at all different sports and stuff like that. As a young kid, I wanted to be a professional soccer player. But of course, it's a tough career to get into and stuff like that. One day I went over to a friend's house, and he had UFC on. I believe it was Anderson Silva. I can't remember who he was going against. But Anderson Silva was fighting. And that was around the time where I first started jiu-jitsu. And I really enjoyed it and stuff like that. I kept going pretty much every day. And I looked at the other pro fighters and seeing how they were doing. And I was hanging in with them. So that's when I started to decide I could make it a career.
Being Canadian, hockey was never in your blood?
It's funny. I can't skate. I was never I never learned how to skate or stuff like that. I'm not bad with ball hockey, but I'm not the best on the ice, no.
I went ice skating once. Yeah, not for me. Speaking of you being from Canada, I saw an interview you did with MMA Weekly where you noted that it can be tough for you to get fights in your home country or Canada. You are fighting here in Buffalo at the King of the Cage event. So do you feel that you're always going to have to fight in the United States, or do you feel that eventually you will get a fight in Canada?
I believe there will come a point eventually. I just signed a multi-fight deal with King of the Cage, so I'll be in the States for a bit. But they've been treating me well, and I have no complaints with them. And they're super close. They're just right over the border in Niagara Falls, so it's like 20 minutes from my house. So it's pretty much home for me.
We have not seen you in a fight since February. How would you say you are different now than your last fight?
That fight, that was a great fight. You put up a really good fight, but I've been working a lot on my striking and pretty much my whole game. It's been a great adventure from February to now, seeing how I progressed in my sparring rounds. My cardio is through the roof right now. Yeah, my weight is on point. Like, I could make weight pretty much next week. And yeah, so everything's been sharp.
Elijah Harris is the opponent here. Was he a name that was on your radar before getting the call for this fight?
Yeah. I watched his fight back in May at the Senate Casino, I believe it was. And I kind of picked him to win in that fight against Sean, because I know he's a great wrestler and he's aggressive. And I know that kind of style doesn't match up well with Felton. So yeah, I kind of picked him, and we talked a bit in the back. Nothing bad or anything like that. Just congratulations, and I know he will bring his best fight. So
the cliche in the fight game is the next fight is always the toughest fight of your career. So why would you say this would be the toughest fight of your career?
Yeah, like I know he's gonna be a tough fight. Every fight is super important, right? Because a loss will bring you down the ladder, right? Farther away from my goal of getting to the UFC. So my job is to keep winning, obviously entertain the crowd, and yeah, so after this fight, it'll be super important. The next fight after that, until I get to my goal, and then we're making money.
Yeah. Is it a balancing act of being an exciting fighter, but also putting yourself in a position to succeed?
Yeah, I find I know how to balance that. A lot of people say that, like a lot of close training partners, they before my fights, they'll say, "Oh, this fight's going to be easy for you," and stuff like that. And I never listen to that. Like, it's always going to be the hardest fight of my life. This guy is gonna look to take my head off, and I never underestimate any fighter. So I'm happy to take this fight against Harris, and I know he's training as hard as I am. I can say that, but I know the outcome will be me winning in the end.
What would you want the MMA fan to know about you heading into this matchup?
That I'm always a humble fighter. There's a lot of fighters out there. They're talking that they're the best and this and that, and they make all the money and stuff like that. But I'm just happy that I'm doing what I love. I have a goal, and I will achieve that goal. There's nothing that's going to stop me. If I were to lose, I'm not giving up. I'm going to my goal. So I always think of all the different possibilities that are out there, but I'm always motivated when I train and stuff like that to achieve my goal of getting to the UFC. I love the support when the crowd is cheering and stuff like that for me, and then that makes me super, super happy. I do my best to entertain the crowd. I know my job is to win, so I'm not going to do anything silly like that. But yeah.
If you were not a fighter, what do you think you would be doing right now?
Well, I recently just graduated, so I would be doing something in sports related. Yeah, so I graduated in recreation and leisure studies. So something with the community. Yeah, but I kind of like what I'm doing right now, so I'm going to stick with that.
Was there a dream job growing up?
I wanted to be a professional athlete. I don't know what sport it was exactly, but I've always played so many different sports when I was growing up. So, but yeah, but now I am a professional athlete. So yeah.
Where can everyone follow you at on social media?
Yeah. On Instagram is genius_MMA. And that's pretty much my main platform right now.
Daniel, there was my conversations with Cody Stamann, Frank Camacho, and Anthony Romero. Appreciate all those guys coming on this week's edition of the podcast. But now we are going to get into our weekly buy-sell segment. And the first buy-sell question actually comes from the MMAReport.com, left by a listener of the podcast over there, Combat Sports Fan, who says, "Do we think Bobby Lashley returns to Bellator for at least one last retirement fight?" I'm going to sell this. I think his days in MMA are over.
Me too. I would love to see it. But the thing is, Bobby Lashley is 42 years old. And I think he's going to be a part of the WWE each and every week for the next 2 to 3 years, maybe even longer. I don't think he's going to take a break from the WWE to go compete in Bellator. because unlike Brock Lesnar, it's not like he's going to bring in life-changing money. He's not going to go to Bellator, be a main eventer on pay-per-view, and sell a million buys. Maybe if he becomes an even big, mega, and super-duper star in the WWE, he could see that pull. But I don't actually see that happening either. It seems like the WWE isn't building around Bobby Lashley. He's more one of their top guys, and I don't know if that'll give him the same cachet as Brock Lesnar, so I'm going to sell this as well. But he's doing good in the WWE.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything you say there. Up next, we got this one more from a tweet that I saw on Tuesday from Damon Martin, where Damon's tweet was this. Darren Till, when asked what he was weighing right now, less than 2 weeks out from UFC 228, quote, "It's expletive," and the expletive starts with an S. "I hate cutting weight. I hate making weight. I hate dieting. I can't just say F you to everyone who keeps babbling about weight." So Daniel Bicel, following Darren Till's comments on Tuesday, the UFC has to be extremely concerned that Till will not make weight next week.
I buy this 1,000,000%, and it's not even from his comments, Jason. Maybe I should sell it, because they should have been concerned the second they signed this fight. It was obvious the last time Darren Till fought, when he missed weight, that he should not be fighting in this weight class. And now we're seeing headlines 2 weeks out of UFC 228 about how maybe he's going to move to middleweight. That's not the greatest thing you want to hear before a guy heads into a welterweight championship fight where he has to weigh at 170. I'm buying this. The UFC should be concerned. But Jason, they should have never put themselves in this spot in the first place and signed this fight.
Exactly. You should never reward a guy with a title shot after missing weight. You know, Robert Whittaker talked about this week in LA while promoting the Ultimate Fighter. It just shouldn't happen. So I am absolutely buying this, that the UFC has to be extremely concerned that, on whether Darren Till is going to be able to make weight, because if weight wasn't an issue, there's just a better way to answer that question. I mean, if you're not going to tell people what you're weighing, that's going to make a lot of people think that, it's going to be a tough 2 weeks for you, or not even 2 weeks at this point. I mean, we're almost at a week now for him to get down to 170 pounds. I mean, no 1 pound allowance in this one, so we'll see what happens there. By the way, speaking of the Ultimate Fighter, that is going to debut on Wednesday. And by sell on this being the last season of The Ultimate Fighter on cable television, I'm going to sell it, Daniel. And I think that maybe there's one more year after this, but, I don't think that, ESPN exactly has a ton of availability in terms of what they're doing, but I think we see at least one more season after this one on one of the ESPN family and networks before potentially this show either becomes a part of ESPN Plus or Fight Pass.
I think I'm going to buy this because I love the way you worded the question. Cable television. I don't think we see this on ESPN2, ESPN News, or ESPN. I think there will be another season of The Ultimate Fighter on ESPN Plus.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if people get get interested in this season of The Ultimate Fighter. I did see a note that
get interested, Jason.
Did you see the note that the youngest heavyweight is 28 years old?
No, I did not see that. That's a note.
I saw that on social media, and I was like, oh, man. I know it's going to take to my DVR, but will I watch it?
While we're talking about age, I want to bring up a very serious topic, Jason.
Okay.
Tony Lopez. I was looking up Tony Lopez.
Okay.
Just to see if he's fought recently, because it was becoming a thing on our show where he mentioned Tony Lopez, he just fought. But the MMA report jinx happened, and now he hasn't fought since March, which I think we broke Tony Lopez. But I have a bone to pick with the internet, all right? I go to SureDog, and they say the man's 44, born in the year 1973. And I go and I just Google Tony Lopez, and according to Wikipedia, Tony Lopez is 55 years old. And he's 5'6".
Okay, Tapology says he's 44 years old.
Wikipedia says his division is lightweight and super featherweight, and he's 5'6". And I feel like the saddest part about it is that this Wikipedia has been like this for a year, and no one's noticed.
Well, Tony had that fight in bare knuckle against Joey back in June. And I know bare knuckle had an event this past weekend. I still saw that they got a good amount of media coverage for that event.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, you can get media coverage if you pay for it.
I've talked to some people who said that's not the case.
Hey, man, I tell you what, though, I will say this. Bare knuckle boxing is like a nice, like, human interest story. You know, like, it's interesting. It really is. And I can see why websites would want to cover it. I don't know, man.
It's just not something that really interests me.
Especially because MMA already fills like whatever void that would do. Like, I'm like, MMA fulfills my combat sports love. And if there's any space left over, it's occupied by obviously pro wrestling or boxing or kickboxing. I just don't know if there's any room for another combat sport. And the thing with bare knuckle boxing is like, I don't know. It just feels a bit gimmicky to me. That's just my opinion, though. I understand why others like it. And apparently the Lopez-Beltran fight was phenomenal. So I may need to watch it.
But here's the crazy thing about combat sports is the boxing matchup between KSI and Logan Paul is reportedly generated as much as $11 million and had 770,000 paid views on YouTube at 10 bucks a piece.
I mean, can you imagine? Can you imagine being like someone in UFC or Bellator office, and you're just scrambling to figure out how to do 250,000 buys with a pay-per-view with two championship matches, and you see these YouTube jabronis do 800,000 buys? You got to be pulling your hair out of your head, don't you?
And they're talking about having a rematch in the United States.
And they're going to do 850, man. They're going to do great. I hate the internet. I really do. And I watch a lot of YouTube, so I'm aware of who Logan Paul is. This guy's nuts. This guy is why the internet sucks. Logan Paul, and I'm confident there is no crossover between people who watch Logan Paul and people who listen to this podcast. And if there is, stop watching Logan Paul. Please keep watching our podcast. We need it more than him. But this guy sucks, Jason. Like, this guy went to a Japanese suicide forest and, like, recorded bodies and acted like it was, like, a vlog. You know, this guy sucks. I hate this guy. It makes me angry that this is successful. And the worst part is the UFC should sign him.
I mean, and that we have that in our buy sell. If, you know, buy sell, Logan Paul should be under contract with UFC or Bellator.
Well, Logan Paul would never do it because you know why? He's going to make a lot less money. UFC's going to take a big ass cut out of Logan Paul. So Logan would never do it. But God, man, as much as it pains me to say it, I think Bellator should sniff around and should attempt to do it just because it's a whole hell of a lot of money. You know, you go and you sell your soul for one event, but you make that cash flow that can foster signing other fighters. But again, it is not realistic because Logan Paul is not going to make more money signing with the UFC or Bellator. And he's going to have to give up more of the chunk of the change, I would assume.
Look, if the UFC signed CM Punk, why would you not sign Logan Paul?
Yeah, exactly. It's not like CM Punk was an amateur wrestling phenom. He was a pro wrestling guy who, you know, Logan Paul has a bit of a nicer body than CM Punk. So yeah, the UFC's already sold their soul. You know, Logan Paul, Jake Paul, whoever, sign them if you can. But I would buy that they should do it, but I'll sell that Logan would even ponder the offer.
Yeah, I don't think he would either. But it's just when I saw how many, because I saw people talking about like Friday of last week or Thursday of last week. And I was like, and then when I saw how many buys it got, I'm like, oh my God. I mean, just like, I almost feel like, is this going to be like, you remember when, you're probably too young to remember this, but remember when Fox's celebrity boxing, is this like a celebrity boxing 2.0?
But with celebrities that are in their prime, that's the difference.
Yeah.
It's like at the time, you know, Dustin Diamond, Tonya Harding, they weren't in their prime. They were down on their luck, and they were talked into it. But Logan Paul, KSI, who was his opponent, Jake Paul was the co-main event, Logan's brother. He took on another YouTuber. These are people doing a boxing event, and they will never be more popular than they are today. I mean, they're obviously not my demographic, and I'm 23. It's more of that 14 – or it's more of that like 10 to – 17-year-old demographic, but all those kids have their parents' credit cards, and Logan Paul is like one of the biggest celebrities in their life right now. So imagine, Jason, if like who are the big celebrities today? I can't even think. I can't even think of an example, but it's almost, dude, it's like the biggest celebrities today are Obama and Trump, you know, in the adult world. They really are. It's like the actors aren't. If like Trump and Obama did a boxing match, that would, I would watch that. I mean, we all know who would win, but I would watch that. If the two biggest celebrities in your world, Jason, did a boxing match in their prime, that to me is the comparison, because for people that are that age watching YouTube, Logan Paul is their Gandhi. You know, Logan Paul is their Brad Pitt, is their Tom Cruise, their Jennifer Aniston, their Topanga.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it's absolutely amazing to see how much business they did. But I think it also shows you price it at a low price point. You got a chance to sell a lot of those things. We do want to end on this note. Last week, of course, they came out. Michael Chandler has resigned with Bellator. And Patricio Pitbull had these comments in a story titled, Patricio Pitbull, Michael Chandler stayed in Bellator to avoid USADA. And this is what Patricio had to say. He goes, quote, I've already said it before in interviews and I tweeted about it. Chandler wasn't going anywhere near USADA. He was just talking about the UFC's negotiating tactics. This guy is one of the biggest PED users in the sport. Goes on to say, I think it's a good thing he stayed. That way my brother can avenge his loss and I can beat him up too. You know, look, was not surprised to see Patricio with these comments. I'm not going to lie. There are people in the MMA industry that have questions about Michael Chandler, but the fact is that, you know, he's never, failed a drug test. And, my understanding is, I guess Patricio got a lot of hate over these comments. And, the thing I love about the Pitbull brothers is, you, anytime you talk to either one of them, you don't have to worry about them not telling you how they feel about something.
Yeah.
But I think if you're Michael Chandler, I think the best way for you to combat this is, okay, you know what? My next fight, let's bring in VADA or bring in a state athletic commission and let's do, you know, out of competition testing throughout the fight camp.
100% agree with you. I mean, I'm not going to come out here and accuse Michael Chandler of being on the juice here. But I'm siding with you in that I'm not going to chastise Patricio for being outspoken. That's what he believes. And it's refreshing to see guys be so unfiltered, so raw. And, if that's his opinion, then let's hear it. And that's clearly the way for Michael Chandler to answer Patricio Pitbull's questions.
Yeah,
I guess they're not questions, right? They're more statements.
Look, sign me up for Patricio Pitbull, Michael Chandler.
Yeah, sign me up for any Pitbull brother in the cage of Michael Chandler. There's no love lost between those two.
Look, outside of Chandler Alvarez 3, the matchup I want to see with Chandler and Bellator is against Patricio Pitbull. And Patricio will come up to 55 to fight him.
That to me is awesome. That to me would be a great fight. And maybe that's the long game for Patricio. I don't know if he's doing this because, you know, it's what he thinks or he knows that maybe he caused some heat, but I would love to see that fight, both because of the trash talk and the fight itself.
Yeah, that would be, you know, unbelievable, but that is going to kind of do it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, we do want to thank MyBookie for being an advertiser on this week's podcast. Of course, join MyBookie and they will match your deposit dollar for dollar, 100% up to $1,000. All you got to do is go to MyBookie and use the promo code MMAReport to activate this offer. So do appreciate MyBookie being a part. So if you want to start, maybe it's college football this weekend, or maybe you want to start play some bets on UFC 228, MyBookie definitely is the place to go. Coming up on next week's edition of the podcast, of course, we're going to get you ready for UFC 228. Also, going to start to have some interviews. I talked to Seth Pazinski recently. That'll be on next week's podcast. Look for him. Of course, he's going to be fighting up in Canada at Unified MMA. So I had a really interesting conversation with him, now fighting at middleweight, no longer at 170 pounds, and really shared an interesting story about kind of how that decision and how Dominic Cruz played into that decision. So that's going to be on next week's edition of the podcast. Of course, be sure to rate and review this podcast on our podcast, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play. And of course, a new episode of the MMAReport podcast comes out every Wednesday morning on RadioInfluence.com.
This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Isn't it great to be talking about college football? Isn't it great to the start of the season? There are certain parts of the year that favorite times of the year for folks. This is one of mine. And, you know, I really applaud, and there are a lot of things that administratively college football does not do well. But one thing that's just gravitated over time is the big extravaganza that is Labor Day weekend. Now, you go back, it's not a new thing. I can go back years and years ago watching games on Labor Day night. It's usually, kind of a rite of passage to have at least a game or two on Labor Day. But what they have done, obviously, with the advent of Thursday night games and Friday night games, they've made this an opening weekend that sets the stage of college football. And the NFL has kind of bought in to where it's the college football has center stage. The NFL has week four of the preseason. They get done on Thursday night.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and, of course, RadioInfluence.com.